Committee is in session. We are happy to be here. It's 2 minutes after one. In attendance are Representative Lynn, Representative Coghill, Representative Ramris, Representative Dahlstrom. We have a quorum. We're going to try and conduct a confirmation hearing and then two pieces of legislation. We're going to be losing Representative Coghill at 1:30. So first, we want to do a confirmation hearing on the Commission of Judicial Conduct for Chris Brown. Are we doing that telephonically?
Yes.
Is that right? Chris, are you with us?
Yes, I am. I'm sorry. They just unmuted me here, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee. Good afternoon.
We're very happy to hear from you. We hope you're having a nice afternoon in Anchorage. And the floor is yours if you'd like to introduce us. Introduce yourself to the committee and go over some of your credentials and whether this is a new appointment or a reappointment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good afternoon from Anchorage, where we don't have any ash fall, so we're thankful for that. This is a new appointment. I've been in Alaska for 5 years, and as a relative newcomer, I have been really enriched in my life and enthralled with the proximity that one in my position can have to being involved with the operation of the state. I'm interested in this commission in particular and in serving the state, and that I have just a desire to see the rules followed and fair play play out in all of the forms of the government. So again, with 30 years of telecommunications industry experience, most of it in upper management, I'm here with AT&T, as my information says now, and had been with AT&T since I arrived in Alaska. I'm really just looking forward to helping not only citizens who may have some redress against a judge in a particular situation or justice, but also in creating an environment where our justices and judges feel that they should be free to do their jobs with the protection that a commission such as this can provide them as well.
Thank you, Chris. Are there questions for Mr. Brown? Representative Gruenberg has joined us. Representative Gruenberg, we are hearing from Chris Brown, who is an executive with AT&T and is up for confirmation on the Commission on Judicial Conduct. Calling from Anchorage.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Does anybody else have questions? I'll sort of go tail end while I get my stuff together here. Anybody else? If nobody else does, I'll go now.
Representative Gruenberg.
Mr. Brown, I have read with some interest your resume and the other documentation we have received about you, and I'm going to ask some questions, and I want you to know the questions I'm asking are purely professional, and I certainly have nothing other than it looks like you are very a background, except in this one area, are very no questions would I normally have at all. But I see that you have listed on your application that you are the treasurer of the Alaska Family Council and a member of the board of directors, been on the board since 2007 and have been treasurer since 2008. Is that accurate, sir?
Yes, Representative Gruenberg, it is.
Had you, and I couldn't tell, maybe I missed this, where had you lived immediately prior to coming to Alaska? I understand you've only been here since about 2002. Is that, when did you come to Alaska, sir?
March 1st, 2004. I made a 4,000 mile and 100 degree Fahrenheit change coming from Atlanta, Georgia area.
Thank you. And were you a member of the Alaska Family Council or any group like it in Georgia?
No, sir, I wasn't.
Okay. Do you know if other members of the Alaska Family Council have submitted any outstanding applications to be on the Commission on Judicial Conduct or the Judicial Council?
I'm not aware, Representative Gruenberg, of any other of my colleagues on that board who have so applied.
I note that on February 5, 2009, you were appointed to the Alaska Land Mobile Radio, that's ALMR, Advisory Board. Are you on any other Alaska, State of Alaska boards or commissions, or have you applied?
No, sir, I haven't. Yeah, and I have been involved in the ALMR Advisory Board, I think largely as a result of my professional background.
Okay, I'm going to ask you some questions that may have been asked in the Senate hearings, But pardon me, I haven't had a chance to review a transcript of that, and I apologize if I am asking the same questions. What was there about the Commission on Judicial Conduct that prompted you to apply for a seat on it? It looked to me like this was the only board or commission for which you applied.
It was. Representative Grunberg, I looked at the things that appeared to have openings in the recent, in this time frame, and was frankly looking for a way that I could just become plugged in a way other than that as a citizen. And this is an area that particularly interests me. I mean, I believe in, again, as I mentioned, perhaps just as you were entering the room, in creating an environment of fairness, not only for citizens, but also in protecting the justices and judges who could be subject to some sort of retaliatory action, I suppose. I'm not that familiar with the specific history of complaints that may have been brought before the commission. But I feel a sense of trying to support the system as it exists.
I understand, and I want you to know that as an attorney of long practice, I haven't practiced for a few years. I have been a family law practitioner in Anchorage for many years. And I am an active member of the bar. That is my agenda also, exactly that, sir. And my questions are all asked to assure myself, if nobody else, that the independent judiciary would not be threatened here. And I don't mean that we preserve the independent judiciary. My fellow committee members they know what I mean. Okay.
Explain it to me.
I understand that pardon me, Mr. Chair, I'm going to be sort of paraphrasing some questions we've prepared here. I understand that the Commission's duties, and that when I say Commission, I'm going to mean Commission on Judicial Conduct, that the Commission's duties are limited to enforcement of the Judicial Code of Ethics. So probably the most important prerequisite is that members of the Commission do not come in with any personal agenda. Mr. Brown, do you feel, based upon your position with the Alaska Family Council or anything else, that you would be able and willing to separate any agenda of the Family Council from your duties on the Commission?
Absolutely, Representative Grunberg, and I trust that every member of the Commission, whatever their position, be they a business person, a judge, or a lawyer, would do exactly the same. And that, I think, that's clearly required to make this committee, commission, perform its job. So, without fail, I have no problem, leaving personal issues, whatever they may be, at the door.
Okay. Have you? Did you apply to this board at the urging of any members of the Family Council?
I was made aware of it from folks about whom I'd asked how I get involved, and one of those people was one of the fellow members of the Family Council.
Okay. I note, and I'm taking my questions here from the Family Council's website, the one that specifically deals with what they term judicial activism, and their position on judges. And I don't know if you're familiar with that. Have you reviewed that particular page on the website?
I think I'm pretty familiar, Representative Grunberg, with everything that the Family Council has done. As a council.
Okay. Just paraphrasing from that, and I appreciate the latitude of the committee. I'm the only member of the minority here today, so I am asking probably questions others would ask if they were here. The Family Research Council believes judges have an obligation, and this is taken from the website, believes that judges have an obligation to interpret the law as it is written and not to impose their own policy preference. And that when they do not do that, but they maybe impose their own policy preference, they, quote, usurp the rule of legislators, and, quote, thus judicial activism undermines the very basis of our representative democracy, unquote, giving an example being Roe versus Wade in the U.S. Supreme Court. Do you believe that such activity, judicial activism by a judge, would be unconstitutional?
Well, I don't believe, first, Representative Gruenberg, that is germane at all to the specific commission for which I applied. And I would suggest that were I to respond to that in any great length, it would be as an opinion as a member of that council, which is not really the purpose for this hearing, as I understand it.
I
would say, if I may, though, that your first, one of the first points you made with regard to separation of powers and applying the role, or properly supporting the roles of all forms and all stations within the government, is an important one.
You know, I'm sorry. I was kind of getting ahead of myself a little bit. I was going to really come to the penultimate question, which is what you have gotten to, and let me skip to that. Do you believe a judge should be disciplined for ruling in a judicially activist manner?
I don't believe that I would be in a good position to do that, nor would I believe that a member of the Commission on Judicial Conduct would be asked to judge on make that ruling.
I would hope not. I'm just seeking an assurance there.
Believe me, sir, I understand. I'm not so naive as to understand the background is behind your questioning. And I'm firmly convinced that any person who sits on the Commission for Judicial Conduct, with regard to their own personal political beliefs and aspirations, should be and would be expected to and required to leave their personal feelings about any particular judge or any particular judgment and deal solely with the conduct, which is the purpose of the commission. I recognize that that is a challenge for all of us, and I'm certainly willing to say that I believe I'm up to it, and would hope that having served on the commission at the pleasure of the government, that they would see that in retrospect.
Yes, thank you. And I guess just another question along a similar line. There was a case that went up to the Ninth Circuit, the Feldman case. It was the Right to Life Commission group versus Feldman. I don't have the citation here.
Representative Gruenberg.
Mm-hmm.
What did you have for lunch today?
You want to know what I had for lunch today? Can I finish my questioning, and then we can discuss that off the record? The question that I'm getting at is that members of the Commission on Judicial Conduct were sued. The name of the case is Alaska Right to Life Political Action Committee versus Feldman. They were sued in their official capacities because the group felt, I'm talking about the Right to Life group, felt that that it should not be against the canons of ethics for judges to answer candidates to answer questions posed to them in a questionnaire. In other words, the members of the committee at the time, the Judicial Conduct Commission, were sued. Would you find yourself in a conflict of interest if other suits were similarly brought? They weren't sued personally, they were sued as members of the commission. Would that put you in an embarrassing position should any group like that sue in the future?
Well, I don't know the details of that, Representative Gruenberg, but I appreciate the general characterization that you've applied. And I would say that, being willing to take on any risk that might result from the appropriate action of the Commission on Judicial Conduct is one that I'd be willing to deal with. And should such a apparent or potential conflict occur between any personal belief I or an acquaintance may have and what the right and proper response of the Judicial Conduct Commission has, would be simply one of those risks that one has to take.
Okay. I just wanted to really put on the record that you would be independent in this matter. I appreciate your candor. I appreciate your answers. I appreciate the chairs allowing me the latitude of asking these questions, and I'll be happy to tell them what I had for lunch afterwards. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Brown. You sound very well qualified.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
We appreciate that. Are there any other questions? Representative Dahlstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and this is more of a comment than a question for members of the committee here. First, I'd like to thank you, Chris, for serving with the military and the others involved in working on the LMR issue. I represent two military bases, and that's an important, critical issue to our state. I want to thank you. I know a lot of that is done on your personal time, and really appreciate that. I also want members of the committee to know that I have met Mr. Brown before, but more importantly, even I know several people who work with him and know him extremely well, and I took the opportunity to do a little research on Mr. Brown and have nothing but the highest regard for him, and I would like that on record. I think that he would be an outstanding member on this commission, and I think that he should have our unanimous support.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you for applying.
Other questions? I don't see any from the committee members. We don't have anything to sign.
Yes, we do.
We do? Great. So I would take a recommendation from a committee member, Vice Chair Dahlstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wish to make the motion to move Mr. James Christopher Brown from Judiciary Committee to serve as a member of the Judicial Conduct Committee with individual recommendations.
Just for the purposes of discussion, I want to put something on the record. I'm going to object just for the purpose of saying something, and that is I do not want any of my comments or questions to be taken as casting any aspersion on Mr. Brown. I think he's of the highest quality, and I want that on the record, or the Alaska Family Council. I want that on the record, too, that I am not at all questioning anything. I just wanted to get those assurances on the record. Thank you.
So
and
noted.
I will remove my objection.
The objection is removed without objection, without further objection. We thank you very much, Mr. Brown, for your interest in public service, and we thank you for being available to the committee today. We look forward to your confirmation hearing later in the month of April when the full legislature convenes. Thank you, Mr. Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, members of the committee.
Well,
good day.
Next, I'd like to thank Representative Coghill. This committee would have had very little work this legislative session if it weren't for the bills put forward by Representative Coghill. So with that, we're going to hear HB 141. Amanda, are you going to present today? We're so happy to have you before us. You're such a fresh, clear voice here in the state legislature. And we're happy that you're before us. Do you want to introduce yourself for the record and your
I gave you some work.
My name is Amanda Morganson, and
would you pull the microphone just a little closer?
My name is Amanda Mortensen, and I'm staff representative Coghill.
And my name is Barbara Murray, and I'm the Deputy Compact Administrator for the Department of Health and Social Services, Division of Juvenile Justice.
Welcome.
Thank you.
And today we're bringing before you House Bill 141, and this bill would enact the new Interstate Compact for Juveniles into law. It replaces the old compact, which was created in 1955. This compact would ensure the supervision of juvenile offenders and the return of runaways. It also provides the procedural means to regulate movement of juveniles who are under court supervision across state lines. The Association of Compact Administrators estimates that the Interstate Compact on Juveniles is used in 20,000 to 30,000 transfer and supervision cases annually. This new compact would ensure that all states have identical language in their statutes, which would help with compliance issues. The new compact provides procedures for enforcement, which the old compact lacked, and it also provides for the collection of standardization information and information sharing systems. This is a chance for the states to have the means to deal with state problems and enforce state solutions without having any federal intervention. As of now, 36 states have enacted this compact, and 6 are currently in the process. If Alaska chooses not to enact this compact, the state would have to deal with every other state on a case-by-case basis, which would cost the state more money than if it just enacted the new compact. This compact provides for the safety of the juvenile offender and the state as a whole, and this legislation is necessary to ensure the public safety and security of Alaskans.
Thank you. And what year did you say that the original compact was created, Armanda?
1955.
That's what I thought you said, before statehood.
Yeah.
Okay, so questions from Representative Gruenberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was going to think you were asking, the next question is, when was the new one enacted? Your sponsor statement doesn't say when the new one was enacted.
Through the Chair, Representative Gruenberg, it hasn't been enacted. It was created in just a few years ago.
Do you know the year, either of you?
Through the Vice Chair to Representative Grunberg, the new compact is under development, and we're currently operating under the compact that was developed in 1955, and that's so there's a new commission that is being developed, and there will be a new compact built through that commission.
Madam Chair, I'm slightly confused. I thought that this bill is enacted. I'm reading from your sponsor statement. Do you hear that? It says this bill would enact the new interstate compact. Now, if you're enacting something new, that wouldn't mean it's under development. That means that it's been promulgated and it's now been enacted, I understand, by 31 states or something. So what is the date of the new compact?
The new compact went into effect August of 2008. The 35th state signed on to begin the new compact.
When was it presented to the first state? You know, it's like a uniform act. They drafted them, they presented to the state. So do you know when it was presented?
I'll have to get you that information.
Do you have any approximate date, ma'am, through the chair?
You can get that and bring it back to the committee. That would be great.
I would like that information.
We'll get that, Representative Grunberg. Thank you. Do you have further questions, Representative Grunberg?
Oh, no.
Okay. Any other questions from members of the committee? Representative Coghill, as I know you have just a few minutes, really, literally, before you have to leave, is there anything you would like to put on record today pertaining to this?
Madam Chairman, one of the things that has been an increasing change in both this state and other states is the placement of those juveniles under state custody. And not only has the issues changed with regard to juveniles, but how do you handle them from state to state? And so I think a compact is probably one of the better ways to go. And generally speaking, I favor compacts. As you can tell, I've got two of them going this year, so that we have an agreement from state to state that makes things move smoothly. And so allowing our justice system and our health and social service people to talk with other states on either the placement of children like I've done before or juveniles is very important. Or we'll wait for the federal government to tell us how to do it. And to me, that goes against what I generally think of as states' rights. So it's better for us to have these agreements. And the compact commissions do have a significant authority. And so we have our compact commissioners who represent us at these particular commissions. And so to think that we're signing away authority is not wise, but it is true that we are delegating authority to a compact that we have representation on. So, they do talk about those very difficult issues on how to place these juveniles. So I think it's an important thing to do, otherwise I wouldn't have introduced it. But I have assigned it to this young lady who is an intern with me this year. And she's getting to know the compact commissioner very well. So
and very
that's my purpose in introducing it, and we'll leave it there.
All right, great. Armanda, do you wish to make any comments?
Vice Chair, we were just looking at some dates, and there was a list that was handed out to all the committee members of the states that have signed on so far. And the earliest date looks like it was in 2003, and from the materials, it looks like the idea was in concept in 2000, and it was actually materialized in 2002.
Madam Chair, on that.
Representative Grunberg.
I'm familiar with the process that the Uniform Commission, Commissioners on Uniform Laws do, and what the process is, it culminates in a document that endorses and promulgates whatever the bill is, the Uniform Commercial Code or the latest amendments to it. And then it gets ratified, as I understand it, by the House of Delegates of the American Bar Association. And that's the formal process, and then it can go to the states for adoption. What is the formal process for this compact? Either of you know, through the chair.
Through the chair, the new commission had their first meeting in December of 2008, and they are in the process of developing rules, and through that commission, through the Council of State Governors, will develop the new rules and regulations and process, either refine or develop new rules for the compact.
I'll have to pursue this. That was not my question.
Okay.
Thank you. I'll get this.
Thank you. And I think what we could probably do is probably help if you I think I know what you're aiming for, and if you work on refining the question, and that'll give you an opportunity to get those exact dates so that, you know, we can go from there. We do have one person online for public testimony from Kenai, Carol Brenkel. Carol, can you hear us?
I can. Can you hear me?
We sure may. If you'd please state your name and affiliation, and then you're welcome to give your testimony.
Thank you very much, Madam Vice Chair. My name is Carol Brenkel, and I am an attorney in private practice in Kenai, Alaska. I have been doing it for more years than I like to admit, but it's 25 this year. I'm also chair of the Alaska Juvenile Justice Advisory Committee. It's also known as AJAC, appointed by the governor. We serve as an advisory committee of Alaskan citizens to oversee implementation of the Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention Act within Alaska, and we also advise the governor as well as the legislature and our fellow citizens on juvenile justice issues and concerns. Now, AJAC has for a number of years now been following the implementation of the interstate compact, and we've been discussing its application in Alaska. And as has already been brought out to the committee, other states have adopted it and or in the process of adopting it. And with its adoption, Alaska will be left out of the picture unless we follow through and adopt it as well. My understanding is that if Alaska does not adopt this compact, we would then have to enter into memorandums of understandings with each of the states before we can accept a child from another state, or before we can send a child to another state. And Barbara Murray certainly would be able to give more more information on that as well. Now, I have dealt with kids who, I should say, I've handled a number of delinquency cases over the years, and I've dealt with a number of kids who have, because parents have relocated, had to transfer probation to other states. And although, you know, interstate compacts might appear to be cumbersome bodies, they still do facilitate the transfer of those juveniles, and they do it safely. I believe it's important for Alaska to adopt this new compact so that we can, you know, track our juveniles and supervise the juveniles who move across state lines. Alaska is in the forefront of developing data that is going to be incorporated within this compact, and I would suggest that we are prepared to play an active role in the development of rules and procedures. And I guess, like anyone else, I would, you know, urge you to adopt it so we can be in on the ground floor and be part of the creative process and not have to react to rules and procedures that have already been set by other states. Again, AJAC had a meeting in Juneau in March, and at that meeting, again, we did discuss the interstate compact and the fact that Representative Coghill had introduced this. And we voted unanimously to support this legislation. And I do believe I drafted a letter at one point indicating that to the legislature. So I want you to know that AJAC is continuing its involvement in the juvenile justice process, and we're glad to be a part of our state's process. And at the same time, we want you to know that we stand ready to work with you as a committee. We certainly stand ready to work with Representative Coghill's office, as well as the Division of Juvenile Justice, in the passage of this. And if there's anything more that we can do, I would appreciate it if you could let us know. Thank you.
Carol, thank you very much for your testimony. We appreciate the work that you do to help the young people in our state, and you can rest assured that we will probably most likely be taking you up on your offer to help us as we want this to run efficiently in our state. You, Carol, is the only person I have signed up to testify. Is there anyone else online for testimony? Is there anyone in the room that wishes to testify on this bill?
Madam Chair.
All right, there's no one in the room and no one online. Representative Gruenberg.
Thank you. If I may ask you a couple more questions.
For Carol?
Yeah. Yeah, for Carol. I note that at least it's not uncommon with uniform acts for there to be amendments, different states to pass bills with various amendments, so long as they don't, quote, drop out of uniformity. And I see from your sheet out here that at least one state, Hawaii, has recommended passage with certain amendments. I'm wondering, have any states adopted this compact with any substantial amendments? Do you have an annotated copy of the compact itself showing if there are any changes made by any of the states?
Representative Gruenberg, was that for Amanda or for Carol, as you stated?
I said it's for Carol. Or Amanda, either way.
Carol's on the line.
Oh, no, I'm no, not Carol Brankle, no.
Okay.
Hi, Carol, Max here. No, it's not for you.
Carol.
It's for you folks here.
Or Barbara, okay.
Sorry, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Through the chair to Representative Gruenberg, I don't have that information, but I certainly can get it for you if there is any.
I think that before it goes to the floor, Madam Chair, I'd like to have a visit with you guys and ask some of these questions, because they may not be of any interest to anybody else, but I like to know what we're doing in these details. Thank
no,
you.
I think those are good questions. For the information of the committee, this bill has picked up a fiscal note, so it will be going to finance after this committee, and
go to Hess.
It has already been to Hess and passed through Hess. So what I would request is if the representatives from Representative Coghill's office, if you could get that information to not only the members of this committee, but also to the members of the Finance Committee, so that they have that at the request of the chair of this committee. I would like to move this bill from committee today, and one more person has just signed up for public testimony. All righty. We'll go ahead, and Barbara Murray, are you with us? That's you.
Yeah.
All righty, so we're taking. Yes, sir.
It's a great privilege for me. May I move House Bill 141? Not yet.
You may, and first I'd like to close public testimony. And Representative Ramirez.
I have a question, if I could.
Representative Gruenberg.
Barbara Tyndall, is that somebody else, or is that you?
Through the chair, that's she's a representative on our Juvenile Justice Advisory Committee.
Okay. And Michael Jeffrey, Judge Jeffrey from Barrow, was he about to testify?
No.
Oh, okay. Thank
nope.
you.
Madam Chair.
Representative Ramirez.
Is public testimony closed?
It is, sir.
Madam Chair, may I move House Bill 141-26-LSO576 /R with attached fiscal notes and individual recommendations?
Is there any objection from members of the committee? Seeing none, this bill will pass from committee with individual recommendations, and we'll just take a quick at ease while we sign.
I love it. We're back on the record. We now move to House Bill 139 by Representative Gatto and Representative Gruenberg. Representative Gruenberg, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a cleanup bill, or fix-it bill, I guess you'd say. We passed the House Bill 88 last year dealing with DVDs and text messaging. And inadvertently, we weren't aware that utility companies actually have monitors in their vehicles. And they don't. They no longer generally go into your home to read.
Representative Gruenberg?
Yeah.
Representative Gruenberg, on these monitors, are you allowed to watch DVDs on these monitors?
Not that I'm aware of. We're going to have some people on the phone. But they are strictly for meter reading purposes and emergencies and stuff. You can't plug in Groundhog Day. Even if you wanted to.
Touché. Touche, I surrender. The floor is yours again.
Okay, yeah. I would ask the folks on the line to please answer Representative Ramirez's question, but when it gets to you. But seriously, no, I don't believe you can. They no longer go into your home. What they do now is the stuff is printed out on the monitors and recorded, and then it it basically goes to the monitors. And it's much quicker. They only need one or two meter readers in the whole MLNP area in Anchorage. It's very much more efficient, and it is the intent that the term utility construction on page 2, line 13, includes vehicle dispatching and response information as part of the maintenance and repair concept. And this, by the way, also transmits immediately to these technicians if there's a gas leak or a wire down or something. So it's super important for emergency prevention and response. And with that, we introduced it at the request of the utilities, and I understand we now have a letter from Chugach, dated March 6th, from Bradley Evans, the CEO at Chugach Electric. I'd like to be part of the record, and we have other things in the record, and we have some people to testify. Thank you for scheduling it. I hope you'll pass the bill out.
Representative Grunberg, can you take some questions before we hear from the...
Yes, I can.
So, Representative Grunberg, my question is about these so-called meter readers. What if a so-called meter reader brings in aftermarket technology to convert their screen to a DVD in between visiting homes and businesses, and in fact tries to abuse what's proposed in House Bill 139 in order to not only read meters but also to watch movies in between reading meters? Would this bill make it not a crime for those people that installed aftermarket equipment into their meter reading vehicles?
No, it would still be a crime. And the reason is because, number one, these vehicles do not belong to the meter readers, as I understand it. And again, if the utility folks would correct me, but they're company cars. And you can't fool with it. They don't have the vehicles. The vehicle goes back to the company garage. And secondly, it's already a crime to disable or allow a DVD in any vehicle. That was under the misdemeanor section in House Bill 88. That's not affected by this. This is strictly for use in the utility construction, et cetera. That would not be, and it would be an illegal misdemeanor, punishable by up to a year in jail, so don't do it.
Representative Dahlstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Grunberg, have you checked out the website of the Alaska Family Council to see what their stand is on this issue?
I'd be shocked. It's a utility issue.
Is that a yes or a no?
It's a no.
Thank you, sir.
But I can if... No, I really, I want the folks on the Family Council.
Thank you, sir.
We are very serious. They are a good organization, and I really believe it.
It is, and this is, I believe, a good piece of legislation, too, just a little bit of levity.
Thank you. I don't want anybody to take offense at our
thing. Read meters.
All right, let's go to Curtis Thayer, who signed up to testify. He's available for questions. Curtis?
My name is Curtis Sayre with NSTAR Natural Gas, and we are in support of HB 139, as it really what it does is it clarifies current state statute. In an earlier question, it was about the meter readers. Our meter readers, as does Chugach Electric, Municipal Power, and Golden Valley Utilities, all support this legislation. We have vans that go down the street and read the meters, and they have automatic data acquisition into computer terminals in the vehicle itself. The driver is not looking at the terminal, but it allows for that data acquisition. If there's a problem, then they are notified and they can look at it. And also, like Representative Bloomberg has stated, the dispatching of vehicles, because that's how we dispatch out into the community our service techs, especially in emergency situations. Then I'm open for any questions.
Thank you, Curtis. Do you have an HR department at NSTAR?
Yes, we do.
And do you have an employee handbook?
Yes, we do.
And these so-called meter readers?
Mm-hmm.
These so-called meter readers, what would be the penalty for installing aftermarket hi-fi stereo equipment so that they could read, they could watch DVDs in between reading meters? What would be the position of the HR department at Chugach and NSTAR?
Well, I cannot speak for Chugach Electric, but as far as NSTAR, these are, like earlier stated, these are company vehicles that are returned every day, and if there's any altercation to the company vehicles, there would be severe disciplinary action, which could include dismissal.
All right.
These vehicles, all of our vehicles have GPSs, so we track the vehicles. Also, from our offices, we can track and know the location of our vehicles, and obviously, if one is idle and watching them and idle for any amount of time, we will know that information, and if by chance they're watching DVDs, but HB 88 would cover that as far as being a misdemeanor.
All right, and what if a meter reader, what if one of these so-called meter readers brought a portable DVD with them, would House Bill 130 in fact give them immunity from the previous legislation that was passed?
No. Because this is for operating, this bill is strictly for clarification as far as utility needs, as far as work in the field. This has nothing to do with personal use, and HB 88 would cover that from last year as a misdemeanor. And they're not allowed to have private DVDs in their vehicles. DVDs.
And that once again takes us back to the HR policies of NSTAR, is that correct?
What's that now? I'm sorry?
I said that once again takes us back to the HR policies of NSTAR?
Yes. These vehicles are company vehicles that are returned every day and not necessarily assigned to the same person the next day. And these terminals, especially for meter reading, are proprietary in the software and doesn't allow any other usage other than data acquisition for meter reading. And as we go forward and do FOS or field order systems, that again is proprietary information just for the program in dealing with utility work. So there would be no access to put a DVD in.
Are there other questions from other members? Representative Gruenberg has a question.
It's not a question. It's really a response to you, Mr. Chair. If somebody put a portable DVD on the passenger seat or something as they were driving, then that would be a crime under the main part of House Bill 88. If there were an accident and the guy or woman were reading that, then they would be guilty of a felony depending upon the seriousness of the accident. Or it could be a misdemeanor even if there was no accident. But that's definitely not affected by this bill, Mr. Chairman.
All right. I think you have satisfied the chair's concerns. We have Andy Carbonetius here from the Department of Law. Do you have anything to weigh in on about the use of public utility motor vehicles and certain screen devices?
Mr. Chair, I would say that those questions were so searching, I would call today a screen test.
You and pun go to jail.
Is there any more public testimony? There's nobody here in the room. Curtis, we thank you very much for our lightheartedness this afternoon. It's a pleasure to hear from you.
Thank you.
And we're grateful to have somebody like you available to answer our questions. We appreciate it. We wish you a good afternoon. There's no more testimony in the room or online. We'll close public testimony. Is there any committee discussion about the bill? Seeing none, does the will of the committee? What is the will of the committee?
The will of the committee, Mr. Chair, is I wish to make the motion to move House Bill Number 139, Version A, with attached physical note and individual recommendations from committee.
Thank you. And without objection, that bill passes from committee. That concludes our business for today. It's 10 minutes to 2. We're adjourned.